Cameron Nazir was 4 years old when he started school in the 1980s, a special school in New York City for autistic children. Nazir is now a civil servant in the British government, and he's just written a book, Sending the Idiots, Stories from the Other Side of Autism. It's about what happened to four of his classmates in the 20 years since they went to school together. He visited our studios last week and took us back to his school days.
I have this memory of sitting on the steps outside the school and sitting next to Andre. And Andre, I remember, was a little bit older than me and a little bit taller than me. And whilst I stretched over three steps, what I remember is that Andre could stretch over four steps. And so it's really just tiny little things that I remember. And I remember about 3 years ago, I was visiting a friend in New York and I started walking in the streets around our school. And it was only after I'd walked down the second or third street there I realized what I was doing, which was that I was looking for the building. And eventually I found the building and I sat on the steps outside and I thought about sitting next to Andre. I thought about comparing my size to his. And it was just then that I really began to think that, look, I know what's happened to me since I used to sit on these steps and now. And I don't know what's happened to the others. I don't know what's happened to Andre. I don't know what's happened to anyone else. And I'd quite like to know.
Because one of your memories was sitting on the steps and how much taller Andre was than you, let's start with Andre. He was living in Boston. You visited him. He was living with his sister Amanda. And he is someone who seems to illustrate one of the problems of communication for those who are diagnosed with autism, and it is a spectrum of autism. There's various degrees of functionality. Andre treats, as you write, conversation as performance to the point where he uses puppets to communicate. Explain his behaviors in the context of autism and now of him as an adult.
Okay. What Andre finds really difficult are conversations where someone is disagreeing with him, conversations where he's being expected to talk about something that he finds difficult or uncomfortable, or where he expects someone will disagree with him, or even where he expects someone's going to ask him follow-up questions. Now, as you can imagine, those kinds of settings come up all the time, not just in personal situations, but in work situations. And what Andre tries to do, first of all, is he tries to find local coherence in very simple ways. Local coherence is something that autistic individuals look for a lot. And local coherence is this idea that what it flows from, what this desire for local coherence flows from, is that autistic people often feel flooded by detail, details that perhaps other people have learned to filter out much earlier. And autistic adults continue to manifest some of those symptoms. And so what they do is they look for something simple to do. They look for something very insignificant, but something that they can focus on, which provides them with a form of local coherence. It allows them to stop being flooded by all the detail. It can be something as simple as clicking a pen on and off or playing around with a clip. And Andre tries those sorts of techniques first.
You also seem to share certain strategies for your own local coherence to not be distracted by details. But I notice you have a fountain pen, a little ballpoint pen in front of you, and occasionally you will just touch it and look at it, and it appears as if you're focusing yourself.
Yes, I'm glad I had a pen in my pocket because I don't have any other props here. And the length of the pen is slightly greater than the width of the control box that it's resting against. And so what I'm trying to make sure of is that when I put the pen up against the control box, the length of the pen exposed at each end is equal.
Let's talk about Craig. Craig is now a speechwriter. He always had a gift with words in terms of writing them and writing speeches, but he's unable to deliver them. Tell us his story.
I think Craig's position is quite unusual. I think Craig's difficulties with face-to-face verbal communication are relatively severe in the sense that he, of course, can form full sentences. He can, of course, follow a conversation, but he can't make eye contact at all. He will make it fleetingly because he's been taught that it's an important thing to do, but he can't hold it. His tone is completely flat. He has no tonal variation. And that actually makes a huge difference. I still find it disorientating when I speak to him, the fact that there's no tonal variation. It actually means that you miss a lot of the meaning of things that he says. You don't notice when he's asked you a question. You don't notice when he's exclaimed about something. Sometimes the depth of his feelings about things is hard to ascertain because there's no tonal variation. So that's really quite disconcerting. But then it all changes when it comes to his writing. And it's something that that he hasn't made his mind up yet about and that I haven't made my mind up about yet. And the question really is Craig an effective speechwriter? because he's learnt the right techniques and applies them extremely well? Or is it a step beyond that? Perhaps he started through being a really good mimic. Perhaps he started by being a really good student of speech writing technique, but he's since had so much exposure and practice that he now actually just is a really good speech writer. Now he just is a really good emotive speech writer. And that's a really fundamental question. I mean, it's really a question, I think, that comes to the heart of what autistic people are capable of. Are they ever able to really do it, or are they always just faking it?
Do you think that you and your classmates are a representative sample of what has happened with autistic children and what has been learned in the education methods that have been employed, a representative sample of autistic adults now, young adults like yourself?
I think it's an unrepresentative sample. I think that the people in this book, for the most part, are towards the middle or higher end of the autism spectrum. I think, though, the point that I'm really trying to make in this book, though, is that even for these people, their difficulties were initially really quite profound. Their lives are still very much marked by their autism and by the symptoms of it. And nevertheless, they've changed in really fundamental ways. They've moved in very fundamental ways. They now have really significant relationships with other people. They now have really significant work that they do and that they derive meaning from. And these are all things that they weren't really ever expected to be able to do, even though they were in the middle or towards the top of the autism spectrum. When they were first diagnosed, their teachers or their parents worried that they would never be able to have these experiences. But they have had these experiences. And so it's not just me and it's not just Craig. It's at least a bunch of us who have had these experiences. And so it seems to me that it's not foolish or naive to think that even autistic people who have really fundamental difficulties, that they can make progress, that they can change in some ways.
Cameron Nazir's new book, Send in the Idiots, Stories from the Other Side of Autism, is published by Bloomsbury Publishing, and he joined us in our studio. It was very nice to meet you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.